You're listening to the Humans of DevOps podcast, a podcast focused on advancing the humans of DevOps through skills, knowledge, ideas, and learning, or the SKIL framework.
You know, there was this friction between IT and security. And then when I got really interested in specifically vulnerability management and sort of made the hop over to security, I started seeing those same patterns, but from the security side.
Welcome to Humans of DevOps podcast. I'm Evelyn Ehrlich, Chief Research Officer at DevOps Institute. Our topic today is focused on cybersecurity and what you should know. Today, we have with us Dr. Nikki Robinson. Let me give you a little bit about Nikki and her background. I, of course, did some digging into what she has done, and give me some time. So Dr. Robinson earned a Doctor of Science in cybersecurity, has several industry certifications, and is a security architect at IBM right now, and also an adjunct professor. She has more than 10 years of experience in IT ops, so Nikki, that we have in common, before moving into the security field about 3 years ago. She studied vulnerability chaining concepts and completed her PhD in human factors to combine psychological and technical aspects to improve security programs. She has a passion for teaching, obviously, as she's an adjunct, and mentoring others on risk management, network defense strategies, and digital forensics and incident response. As I said, she's a security architect and has technical experience in continuous monitoring, risk management, digital forensics, and incident response. She is a speaker at many conferences on a variety of topics from human factors security engineering, malicious website graphing, and DevSecOps. She's also the co-host of a podcast titled Resilient Cyber Podcast, with the goal to discuss a variety of cybersecurity and IT with many, many subject experts, and many of you might have listened to her podcast. Finally, one more important thing, she is a volunteer speaking for InfoGuard, also Women in Cyber chapters, which is YSIS, I think, Information Systems Security Association, which is ISSA, and Cyber Jutsu Organization. Welcome to our podcast, Nikki.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Very excited that you're here. Now, the first thing you have to talk about is cyber jutsu. Can you help me on that one?
Sure. Yeah, this is actually a great organization that their focus is really to focus on getting women into the cybersecurity field. So they're working to close the gender gap. They're trying to help mentor young women to get into cybersecurity. And they host all kinds of events. They do webinars. They do workshops on everything from Python programming. And then they do cyber competitions and capture the flags or CTFs. So they do a lot of different events to sort of help encourage young women to get into cybersecurity, and they host a lot of conferences as well.
Are they global or are there also regional events?
I believe both. I know that they mm-hmm. do a lot of regional because I think they have different chapters, sort of like Women in Cyber or WSIS, but they do have a lot of regional events.
Okay, worth checking into. Super, thank
yes.
you.
Yeah.
So, as you can imagine, when I did research on your background and what you do and all the wonderful things you have been through and have been studying, and there was a lot of things I was like, oh, I would love to talk to you about that. But of course, we cannot cover these all. So there are two key things we want to cover today. First, I want to dive a little bit into your book, Mind the Tech Gap, Addressing the Conflicts Between IT and Security. And then second, of course, because I am a woman, and I know we have some women on the show, I want you to share your experience as women in technology. So those are the two things we're honing in. I hope you are ready for that. I know you are ready for that.
I'm ready.
Thank you. So let's get to the book first. I think that's the most important one, because I think it was published in October of 22, so not that far and not that long ago. As I said, the book was called, or is called, Mind the Tech Gap, Addressing the Conflicts Between IT and Security. So first of all, congratulations to that publication. Fantastic. I think I'm going to order it, because that topic is something which is also, I have something I have researched in my career over the years. Now, in the book, you address, and I quote from the book, from a book review, you're saying, or it says, the long-standing challenges between IT and cybersecurity teams. And you're exploring the different job functions, goals, relationships, and other factors that might impact how IT and cybersecurity teams interact. Give us a little bit of an overview of the book, because I think there are some powerful things in there which I would like people to kind of listen to. So enticing them to actually buy your book. And I'm not trying to sell your book. I think this is an important piece most folks have not even thought about, and I want you to do a little bit of a review.
Yeah, thank you. It's funny because I'd had this idea for this book for at least 5 years now, even before I got into cybersecurity. So when I was on the IT side of the house, you know, and working with sort of my security counterparts on assessments or audits, and literally sitting through 4 or 5 hour long meetings on, you know, security controls and configurations. And so I was sort of getting this idea of, you know, it was almost there was this friction between IT and security, because it was like, oh, we're having another audit, or oh, we have another assessment, or this or that, or oh, security does this or security does that. And then when I got really interested in specifically vulnerability management and sort of made the hop over to security, I started seeing those same patterns, but from the security side, you know, seeing sort of the frustration and the, oh, IT won't do this, or I'm trying to work with development and we're trying to get this done and it's difficult or it's challenging. Mm-hmm. And so that was really what sort of, even having that idea, but coming into security and saying, oh, I'm seeing this, you know, sort of this frustration and this friction from both sides. You know, we're both having challenges working with each other. And it's not because, you know, we both have important missions, we both have important goals, but most of the time those are somewhat conflicting. So having teams that have conflicting goals and missions makes it really challenging to, you know, sort of get together and make these things happen. And so that was really what spurred the idea of the book. And I wanted to dive into sort of from a historical context to what traditional job roles look like, you know, 20 years ago, and how we built, you know, IT teams and how they look now, and how that sort of plays into why relationships can sometimes be fractured between the teams. And ultimately that leads to concerns with risk, you know, and risk management. And how do you manage risk with the people that, you know, need to work together. So that's really sort of the spirit of the book, and, you know, hoping to shed some light on why these challenges exist. And then, you know, at the end of the book, I provide sort of a roadmap for, hey, these are the questions you need to start asking yourself and your teams, depending on the type of job role that you have.
I love that last part you said. I think that is essential for folks listening in, having a roadmap to understand what can they actually do, that actionable advice, because sometimes, you know, there are books out there and I'm done with it and I put it aside and I'm thinking, okay, now what? But
right. That's,
yeah, right. It's like, okay, I'm not really sure. I understand, but I don't know what. So that is beautiful. Now, one thing you were, and in the book review, it talks about that also, of course, you were honing into something called empathy and emotional intelligence. And that is something which I have keen interest in, as I've done research for the DevOps Institute on upskilling for the past 5 years. And you would not be surprised that I tell you that the human skills are, there are significant gaps there within IT, and they don't go away. These, and they're particularly around, you know, having that empathy, having these interpersonal skills, and really working and developing collaboration and coordination with others. So that is quite interesting. And of course, there is action, which means people should upskill in human skills. And we've been kind of like a preacher, been saying that. But why is it so hard? Why is it so hard for, and we're both IT people, I'm an IT person, I think I have human skills, plenty. And my kids would tell me, you do, mom, but why is it so hard sometimes for folks in either on the security side or on the IT side, no matter what role, to think about that human skill and adding or working on them? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's such an important question to ask. And it's a question I started asking myself too, because I've working in IT and security for almost 15 years now, it's one of those things I haven't seen as part of IT programs, traditional IT, whether it's academic or certification programs, and in security as well. I know that there are some universities out there that teach emotional intelligence in their IT programs, but I think that's a newer thing. And I just haven't seen as many programs that tout, emotional intelligence, empathy, relationship building, all of those pieces that we need to sort of operate in these big teams and in these big organizations. So I think the first piece of it is sort of the education component. In that it's not really taught to us. We're taught Python and we're taught programming and we're taught, mm-hmm. SQL and all these other things, but we're not really taught, well, what does that mean to somebody else? If I'm on the IT side or if I'm a developer, what does that mean to security? And I think it's really important on the security side to have that understanding and that empathy for what other teams are working on, because if I can't speak to a developer and understand, what they're going through or what they need to do, what their deadlines are or requirements are, it's going to be really difficult to work together. So I think that's part of the challenge is we don't really have this educational component. It's not a part of any certifications that I've at least seen, this sort of emotional intelligence piece. And I've really, especially when I was doing research for the book, really came across a lot of leadership and management books that talk about emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. I had a really hard time finding anything out there, whether it was a book or anything like that, that could be used as a textbook or used, sort of as a guide, that talked about emotional intelligence really for practitioners. There's some stuff out there, but there really isn't a lot. And I think one of the biggest challenges is we encourage our technical people to go for certifications, to go for technical mm-hmm. certifications, that's a great thing, but we don't encourage them to apply empathy to what they're doing. And so I think that's probably where that gap came from.
Here, here, here. I'm hoping that my CEO partner is listening into this podcast. If not, I will point her to that, because we have been saying that we need to start figuring out how can we actually help our community members to expand on their existing human skills or build upon the ones they have or start working on if they don't think they have any. I think the other thing, I was just speaking to Gallup CEO, he was talking about the engagement of individuals in the job world today has been really, really low. But one of his points was that as we are lacking or as we are not developing these human skills, work becomes less fun, not just because of it's in cybersecurity or it's in security or in the DevOps or wherever, but because it's so difficult to bridge across, and we can only talk tech and we could talk processes, but we really don't have that connectability anymore. Mostly, maybe it's gotten worse because of the pandemic. He was saying that they're doing a lot of work at the Gallup as well to start assessing and developing that. So it's a great opportunity for us. Thank you for that. All right, let's shift gears a little bit. The clock is always ticking when we have great conversations. So I want to switch a little bit towards the topic of cybersecurity. And particularly, where do you think it stands today in terms of its priority from what you have seen and from who you've been and visiting with? Where does it stand in terms of priority in executives, leaders, investors, and individual contributors? Because I think there is at least from the research I've done, there might be a shift, and which is good, but I was curious what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree that there's been a shift. And I think a shift really in the last year. I think this, it all really sort of started with SolarWinds. That I think because it had so much media attention, you know, it wasn't just a random data breach here or random cyber attack here. SolarWinds affected lots of different types of organizations, lots of different domains, and it became a business risk. You know, it wasn't just a cyber risk anymore or an incident. It was, oh, my business is in trouble. And not just from a security perspective, but a lot of the people that consumed and used SolarWinds were IT operations groups. And so not having that tool in place, you know, having to find an alternative or not having visibility to your systems or, you know, the potential of an incident, and then you can't, you know, it becomes a snowball effect to the business. And I think that was really what sort of at least opened people's eyes to, oh, there's sort of this cascading effect when there is an incident. That sort of, I think, started to change people's minds. And then I think Log4j was another big one, partially because it got so much media attention, but also because it opened people's eyes to open source software. How are we actually developing? And how can we support developers while still making sure that we understand the risk? So I think it was sort of an eye-opener for both developers and for security professionals to say, oh, we need to really understand how this is going to work and how we can support open source software, but by, you know, understanding what that means to our risk. So I think as far as what those things sort of started to change people's minds, I do think a lot more leadership boards, they're much more interested in having sort of cybersecurity expertise, at least available as consultants or advisors. So I would say there's definitely a shift in the industry as far as leadership goes. And I think they see the benefit of cybersecurity not just being, you know, a security assessment or an audit or an inhibitor, but more of a, hey, if we work together with the cyber team, with our developers, with our IT, with our leadership, we can help provide strategic, you know, we can help with those 5-year plans. We can help make sure that 5 years out, 10 years out, that the business is healthy, thriving, and resilient, especially towards cyber attacks. Because if an organization isn't resilient, let's say, for example, ransomware, I think that's another really big one that's hit organizations, and the amount of cost associated with ransomware, plenty of businesses have shut down because they've been hit by ransomware and it was so costly that they couldn't recover. So mm-hmm. I think those kinds of situations have really changed how people feel. And now they're starting to seek out security advisors, and not just from a, hey, what does our secure configuration look like? Or how do we pass this audit? But hey, how do we plan our strategic IT and development vision with a cybersecurity, you know, professional there to help us?
Do you want to advance your career and organization? We can help you do that. DevOps Institute offers a wide range of educational experiences for you to begin your upskilling journey. Whether you're looking for a defined path to certification, exploring the latest in DevOps, or connecting with the larger community, we can help you develop the specialized skills needed for the future of IT. And it won't just be good for your career, it will also make you indispensable at work. With our lineup of industry-recognized DevOps certifications, digital learning opportunities, and engaging events, you can connect with our network of experts and expand your potential today. Visit devopsinstitute.com and join our community now.
So as a summary, I would say, is it fair to say that cybersecurity is a strategic line item for all of those, particularly executives and leaders?
I guess that's more that is my hope. I really hope so.
let's frame it as a hope. I love that.
Yes. I hope so, because I think there's so much positivity. It's one of the reasons why I wanted to get into cybersecurity, because it's not just cybersecurity, it really is IT and a function of technology. And so I think if we can start to change that idea of, you know, I joke with people, you know, I'm a security architect, but I really joke, I'm really just an infrastructure architect. It's security is, you know, security by design, but really what I'm doing is helping to build environments that are secure. And that's still an IT, a component of IT. So I think it's starting to change, but yes, it's a lot of hope there.
Yeah, you know, this is this reminds me of a philosophical discussion we have had when I was at Forrester, where we had a security and risk team and an infrastructure and operations team, and of course, you know, enterprise architects, application developers, CIOs, and I remember the folks from the security and risk team not wanting to do at the time. This is 2018 when I left, but at that time. They were doing their own research, of course. We always wanted to collaborate because infrastructure and operations, we have to have our heads out and get stuck sometimes in the nasty fixing the mess. And we always had the conversation and said, why are you in a separate group? Why are we not bringing us together into a research team so we can do things together? I don't think that has happened.
Right.
But I think having the risk, sometimes it just takes challenges which are so overwhelming that people, or enough pain that people are changing. And I think one of the other factors, and I'm curious what your thoughts are, is there a metric which executives should have relative to that? I think in some companies, a CEO already has the resilience and sustainability. We're seeing ESG as a topic come up quite a bit. But in your mind, should there be metrics for all of those folks around this topic? Because it impacts, like you said, the business significantly.
Yes, absolutely. There's definitely been a big push in the last 2, 3, maybe 4 years for quantifying cyber risk, you know, really making it much easier, I think, to digest, because it's interesting, I think, when people talk about qualitative versus quantitative, but this idea that if we can help quantify some of that risk, make it easier to digest and help to show what we're talking about, tell that story a little bit better. And metrics, I think when it comes to, you know, here's my bias here because I love vulnerability management, but, you know, anything highly exploitable vulnerabilities, if I'm using threat intelligence, what do I need to be concerned? What are the top three concerns that I have? Mm-hmm. You know, so I think breaking it down into smaller chunks, and, you know, the bane of my existence are like 300 page vulnerability reports. And I think that's, you know, one of those big challenges is don't send those 300 page, you know, vulnerability reports. Let's break this down into metrics that make sense for leadership. It's absolutely imperative, I think, to not just the cybersecurity mission, but to the business mission, you know, to help break those things down and make it easier to digest.
Yep, absolutely. All right. Now, I came across a fantastic short piece by Stefan Napo, who is the VP Cybersecurity Director and Global CISO at Group SEB. And that's a French company. They're doing a lot of small appliances, and it's actually the world's largest manufacturer of cookware. And I'm a cook, so I love their products, but not talking about the cookware, but really talking about what Stefan said. He talked about the swarm cybersecurity or swarm cybersecurity. And of course, in DevOps and in development, we talk about swarming. Have you heard this term? I'm sure you have. And if you haven't, then let's move on. But I'm sure you have. Your thoughts on that. Tell me what you think when that comes to your mind, when I say swarm cybersecurity.
Yeah. So for me, swarming, I also think about in a very IT context, because, you know, typically you have this tiered model, and that's sort of an older model, right, of IT. But if you, let's say you have your help desk and then your systems administrators and then your senior sysadmins or maybe engineering above that. But instead of having these sort of siloed tiers, you have this giving this power to, you know, an IT systems administrator that can sort of help to resolve these things without taking up the chain, because, you know, you don't learn anything that way. So it's this mm-hmm. more collaborative effort of, hey, I think I know how to fix this. I'm going to do this. And then if they need help, they can always ask for help and the team can work together, but it becomes more of this group effort instead of, you know, hey, I've got this thing. I'm going to pass it to you. And I pass the ticket to you and then to you and then to you. So instead of this becoming this endless chain of, you know, what happened to my issue, you know, it becomes this more of a collaborative and teamwork type effort. And so applying that to cybersecurity, I think about the cyber color wheel, if you're familiar with that, this idea of, you know, you have red teams and blue teams, and then you start talking about threat intel and you have yellow teams and orange teams and purple teams that are red and blue teams combined into purple teams. And so you're building this more of a collaborative effort instead of saying, you know, I'm on the red team and I have a pen test and I'm going to lob it over to the blue team and they're just going to have to figure it out. It becomes a collaborative effort, and the blue team can go back to the red team and say, hey, actually, we found these additional things. Can you verify that for us? Can you check to make sure that this is fixed? And so it becomes this more of an open type of team instead of, you know, just these silos. Well, I'm on the red team or I'm on the blue team.
Yep.
You know, it's much more collaborative. And so I think that's 100% the way forward. There is a fantastic, she's on LinkedIn. Her name is Meryl Vernon. She talks a lot about purple teaming. And when I came across her and some of the things that she's written about purple teaming, that's really what started getting me thinking about swarming, right? It's a similar notion, right, of collaboration and bringing people together. But I think it's a big benefit to teams because, one, it empowers your employee or your cyber professional or your developer, but it also improves their skills. It allows them to learn something new. It improves teamwork. And I think there's a big reduction in how long it takes to identify and resolve, specifically, you know, in a red team, blue team context, versus, hey, I have this 200-page pen test report. Here you go. Go ahead and figure it out. You know, it becomes more of this like, hey, we found this vulnerability across 100 systems. Can you guys work on this? And we can see if we can get this fixed and then we can come back and retest. So for me, it's all about collaboration.
Super. That reminded me of something I did with, again, a former colleague of mine, where we looked at MTTR and we found, and not necessarily to security, but we found that the largest amount of time, I think it was 70% of the time, was found in the meantime to detect. And that was because everybody was looking down their own pipe, right, and their own data. So I think that's an additional benefit in terms of meantime detect at the predecessor of swarming. But as you said, MTTR overall, because we are bringing people together, has an incredible impact reducing that, and that again reduces business impact. So super. All right. Let's shift a little bit. We have about 5 minutes or so. I want to cover two topics. One, the skill, and then I want to really get into your thinking on the women in IT or women in tech. So the first one, let's say I want to be successful in cybersecurity. And actually, I did lose an analyst in my former role to the security and risk team, and I was very sad to lose her, but she is a great analyst in this space. But if I wanted to go into cybersecurity, and maybe there's folks on here who are wanting to switch, what do you think are the necessary skill, maybe one or two, to be successful, besides what we already talked about in terms of, hey, you got to be having empathy and so EQ, but what else do you think are essential?
Yeah, I would say a lot of the skills that I brought with me from IT to cybersecurity, and you don't have to have an IT background to necessarily go into cybersecurity, but I can say for me, it helped a lot because I understand technology very well now. I would say troubleshooting is a really, really big skill. And that's, you know, troubleshooting, problem solving, being able to sort of understand enough that you can figure out what's going on, because that's one of the big, big parts of cybersecurity is typically you're handed, you know, a piece of information and you've got to go digging and try to figure out what's going on. And so I think that problem solving, troubleshooting, and natural curiosity, all three of those sort of go hand in hand together, this sort of, okay, let me dig and try to figure out what this is. So I would say that's the first, and I know I said three skills really in one, that was kind of a cop-out, but that's sort of how I would describe that, right? Problem solving as that big component there. I would say the other really important skill, you know, besides sort of that relationship building and what we call soft skills, would really be how do we understand data? So data science is a really important component of cybersecurity. And I've met a lot of really great data scientists that have crossed into cybersecurity, and they are a huge asset because they're able to parse through all of this information that we've been collecting in security with our SIMs for years and years and years. And now we have data scientists to really help us, one, make that pipeline of data easier to digest, easier to bring in, but they also help us pull out the really important information. They're helping us to leverage AI, machine learning models, and different techniques that we may not have had the skills. I may not have had the skills in before in data science, but that's something in the last 2 years I've learned how important it is to sort of have those data science principles in cybersecurity. So I would say you don't have to know Python or machine learning and any sort of depth, but having some of that understanding is really important. Can I give three skills? Can I give one more?
Of course you can.
Okay. One more, I would say, you know, since we're talking about DevOps, right, is the ability to communicate and work really well with developers, to be able to speak the language. If you have some programming background, it's super helpful. Again, you don't have to be a developer, but to be able to understand enough that you can talk to a developer when they're saying, hey, we have this requirement, we have to do this this way, let's figure out a new solution. So I think that sort of being able to speak the language is really important.
Excellent. Fantastic. All right. Our last question. And then I have a fun question for you. But this one is around women in technology. Both of us have been in technology. I have my own challenges, but this is not about me. This is about you. What would you, I would love to hear what was the biggest challenge for you you faced? And of course, how did you overcome it, if you're willing to share?
Absolutely. Yeah, I would say the biggest challenge I had, it was funny getting into IT, you know, starting on help desk and sort of working my way up. I had some really great mentors along the way and sort of, you know, working my way up in IT. I think the biggest challenge I honestly had was when I wanted to break into cybersecurity. And I got so much pushback from my IT friends on, you know, why would you want to go into security? You're never going to be able to come back to IT. You're just going to be in security. And it was such an interesting, I guess, sort of perspective that I had this sort of, you know, you're not going to succeed in security and you're never going to be able to come back. You can never cross the lines again. You know, it was this like making it sort of this like, well, you can't do both sort of a thing. That was a big challenge because I had to essentially go back and say, oh, I can do this. And what I found was going on the cybersecurity side, I actually am far more technical than I was before. I understand way more operating systems. I understand development way better than I used to. And so I guess sort of pushing through that barrier of a lot of people saying no, like, no, you can't do this. No, you aren't going to be good at this. No, you don't have the skill to do this. And really being given a chance to show that I do, that was sort of tough. That it took me a couple of years to make that transition from IT to cybersecurity. And, you know, I had one very great mentor of mine, Philip Culp, who gave me my first shot. And so, you know, and then I was able to sort of go from there. But so I would say that was the biggest challenge. But the biggest thing that helped me was finding a great mentor and someone who was willing to take a chance on me and for me to, you know, show them my skill. But yeah, that was pretty tough.
Wow. Fantastic. Well, thanks to your mentor for supporting you and thanks to you for sticking it through. That's quite impressive. So I have one more question. I know you are very busy and you do a lot of things, but you must have some fun. What do you do for fun?
Oh yeah, I love this question. Yeah, I actually, I'm very big into fitness. Like I love all things outdoor activities, hiking and biking and running. So I love, I'm actually signed up for a couple triathlons. So I love running and biking and swimming and that's what I do for fun.
Wow. Well, this has been a great conversation. You and I could go on. I would love to stay connected. I think there are some things maybe we want to do together.
That would be great.
Thank you so much for being on our podcast. I really appreciate it. You are a wonderful, wonderful individual. So thanks again. We have been talking to Dr. Nikki Robinson, security architect, adjunct professor, volunteer, and book author, and many, many other things. Again, Dr. Robinson or Nikki, thank you so much for joining me today on Humans of DevOps podcast.
For
those listening in, make sure you check out the book, Mind to Tech Gap, Addressing the Conflicts Between IT and Security Teams. It is on my list to order. I actually already pushed the button on my Amazon. So this is great. Humans of DevOps podcast is produced by DevOps Institute. Our audio production team includes my good friend, Julia Papp, and our hardworking Brendan Lay. Thank you to both of those. I'm Humans of DevOps podcast, executive producer, Evelyn Ehrlich. If you would like to join us on a podcast, please contact us at, and this is a very long name, but I'll read it out, humansofdevopspodcast@devopsinstitute.com. I'm Evelyn Ehrlich. Talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast. Don't forget to join our global community to get access to even more great resources like this. Until next time, remember, you are part of something bigger than yourself. You belong.